This is Channel 2.
The Business Bunker with Paul Andrews.
Welcome back to the Business Bunker Show here on channelradio.co.uk in association with bizradio.co.uk. You're listening to me, Paul Andrews, and my co-host, the stonkingly gorgeous Jill Serkin. Hopefully we're joined on the phone now by Simon Hammond of Morpheus Insurance Solutions. Good afternoon, Simon.
Hello, Paul. How are you?
I'm well, thanks. I will skip a beat there in case nobody answers. but it's a pleasure to hear your dulcet tones and to have you join us for this afternoon, Simon. Thank you so much. It's been quite a long time since you were last on the show, and I thought it was about time I touched base with you and basically tried to catch up with where things are for you and your industry. One, during the pandemic and how it's affected the insurance business, and then two, how you see things going forward. So let's kick off. First of all, just tell people who you are and what you do.
Yeah, sure. My name's Simon Hammond. I'm Managing Director of Morpheus Insurance Solutions Limited. We're general insurance brokers, but we mainly specialise in commercial insurance for all different types of businesses.
Fantastic. And how has things been for you during the lockdown, during the pandemic?
Well, our back office system's fully cloud-based, so we can all easily work from home, so our service delivery was unaffected. Mm. However, it's fair to say that the week before lockdown and the first week of lockdown were pretty challenging, with an awful lot of inquiries from our commercial clients about whether or not they were covered for the pandemic under business interruption insurance.
Mm. Yeah. I guess it's unprecedented times as well. So, you know, everybody's going to go in, I don't know.
Exactly.
And what was the answer, Simon, to that?
Well, if we put the awful situation of COVID-19 to one side and the impact it's had on people and businesses, put that to one side.
Yeah.
It's been very difficult, I have to say, because it's estimated that about 95% of small to medium-sized enterprises will not have cover under their business interruption insurance for pandemics.
Mm.
The type of businesses that would have cover, where it is actually available, are sort of the global sports events, the iconic venues, some travel insurance policies, trade credit insurance, event insurance. But if you're talking about your bricks and mortar SME business, then that cover simply isn't actually available.
Yeah, yeah.
Because this is unprecedented, so nobody's thought of it. Is that right?
Well, it goes a step further than that. For a standard commercial policy for an SME who's taken out business interruption insurance, there will, or there may possibly be, an extension for notifiable diseases, but that's only if the disease, the outbreak, occurs within the client's premises or within a certain radius of the client's premises.
Yeah.
And quite clearly, the outbreak was in Wuhan. However, obviously, we are seeing some class actions against insurers. The FCA have got a test case on the go in the courts against a select number of insurers, where basically their policy wording, although, yes, the intention was never to cover it, the policy wording might not have been clear enough to specifically exclude it.
Yeah.
And, you know, at the end of the day, it doesn't really matter what the intention is. If the wording means that it's either silent or it's a grey area, then that does need to be tested. It doesn't really matter what the type of loss is.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And you know, whilst a lot of people are getting upset about things, it is very unprecedented. And as you say, you know, hindsight's a wonderful thing. If anybody had actually tried to take out pandemic insurance a year ago, they would have been laughed out of the place, really, wouldn't they? I mean, I was in a business a couple of years ago, and I won't bore you with the details of why, but someone that had a big control over it wanted us to take out insurance against terrorist attack. And I could only find one insurance company that would even try and cover the risk, and they wanted like 10 grand a year on what was a very small business insurance policy, which, you know, the business certainly couldn't afford, and it really didn't warrant. It was just a silly thing that somebody asked for. So, you know, you can basically get almost anything underwritten. It's just the cost of getting it underwritten and whether it's likely or not, isn't it?
Well, exactly right. I mean, SMEs did have access to cover for pandemics, it's likely it would have been unaffordable. Exactly the same in the case you're citing.
Yeah, exactly. And people don't ever think about that. Funnily enough, I'm going away shortly, and I booked the trip at Christmas time, obviously before all this happened, and I took out health insurance, as I always do, quite. You know, just off the top of my head, I thought, well, do you know what? I better check what this covers now. And of course, I went into their website and it said, if you bought this before the 14th of March, it doesn't cover COVID. And if you bought it after the 14th of March, it does. Obviously, they factored the risk into anything they sold after it became evident that we had this.
Yes.
And of course, typically, I bought it on the 12th of March.
Oh, no.
They've been ever so good. You know, I rang up and I said, look, I bought this. I realise I'm not covered. Can I extend the cover? Yes, it's an extra whatever it was, and so we extended the cover, which is great. But they handled it really well. And funnily enough, they're a local insurance company as well, based at Kings Hill.
Well, I'm going to talk to Simon off air because I've been insured with my dog, and I know that we don't want to talk about that.
Your dog's
today.
An insurance broker, blimey!
With NFU, a very well known thing, and since she was 13 months old, Simon, she's a Dogs Trust dog, and she's now 11 and a half. I've renewed every year, and she now has a thyroid problem, and they have wheedled out of it, saying it's a veteran policy, and she's only insured for accidents, like if she runs out in front of a car. And I said, well, she can hardly run now, she's got arthritis. Aww. And it's just a real rip-off. Yeah. And I'm going to try and go to the ombudsman, but I might talk to you about that off air.
Well, pet insurance is even more difficult than other insurance.
I just wish I'd put the money away for 11 and a half years.
You know, depending on what you're trying to do, I mean,
well, now it's blood tests every month, medicine. It's expensive. I'm spending like 90 quid a month, and haven't claimed for all these 11 years.
Yeah,
you know, so it's outrageous. And especially a company like NFU, which you think, and there must have been small print, and it's my fault for not reading.
But this is part of what Simon's saying, though, isn't it? That you know, playing devil's advocate here, it's incredibly difficult for an insurance company to think of everything to put in a policy, and they have to.
Yeah.
Which is why there's so many pages of small print, because they have to try and think of every eventuality to cover their risk. So you've had a lot of that to deal with, certainly in the early days of the shutdown. Simon, how have things progressed from there?
Oh, I think it's fair to say that it's calmed down quite a bit now. Generally, not just for us, people and businesses are more aware that there probably isn't any cover, unfortunately, apart from these very specific insurance schemes for example, the Night Times Industries Association run by Hiscox, and there's a dental scheme run by QB. And the policy wordings are written by human beings, and if they haven't been clear enough that it's excluded, then, you know, that's got to be tested, isn't it?
I was hearing, sorry to interrupt, but I was hearing that customers or patients were being charged for PPE at dentists, like some of them up to £40-50 extra on top of dental care. Do you know anything about that, Simon?
I haven't been to the dentist, so no.
We're all avoiding
I paid extra to have all the PPE when I had my hair cut, so it's probably the same sort of thing.
Oh, really? You had to pay extra for it?
I'm impressed he's had a haircut, myself.
I had very strict instructions. My hairdresser was amazing. Flo and Co in Whitstable, give them a shout-out. But I went in, and he had, since June, been absolutely ready and put in partitions, so each client was in their own little room, if you like, and we weren't supposed to use the loo, which was a bit awful because I was in there quite a while.
I have to tell you, she's got a toilet fetish. Before you get dragged into anything here, Simon, I'm just warning you, that's all.
I took my own mask, and there was no extra charge at all. So
I think that they've done the sale. I think they'd spent about £800, and then, you know, why wouldn't you ask your customers just to sort of, you know, help a little bit.
Well,
it's been really hard for business.
It has, and I was kind of saying the other day on Twitter that all this money that we're spending on furlough, that government is spending, which is, you know, we'll be paying for hundreds of years, wouldn't it have been better to have given some of that money to small businesses to see if they could adapt so that people could have gone back to work earlier?
Well, it's interesting you say that, and I think that probably comes back to what Simon was saying about, you know, the difference between the initial reaction to companies trying to claim on their insurance and finding that they're not covered. I guess that was mitigated to some extent when the government announced all the payments and loans and things they were making.
Yes.
But to follow up on Jules's point, just as a general point, what the Australian government did was they just gave everybody $5,000, I think.
Yeah.
Which would have been a much easier thing to administer,
yeah,
and would have meant that however many million people fell through the gap wouldn't have fallen through the gap. But let's go back to talking to Simon about insurance, because that's what he's here to talk about. Have you got any thoughts, Simon, on the other side of this, which is, because we've all been locked down and nobody's gone anywhere for 3 months, I'm assuming that the car insurance companies are having a bit of a field day because their claims must have dropped right off.
But they have, absolutely right, and some of them have actually paid some premium back to customers in recognition of that.
Really?
Okay. Yeah, and I think it's been interesting just putting the catastrophe of it all to one side, it's been an interesting process to see how different insurers have responded differently. Some have been very cooperative and flexible, and some haven't. And quite frankly, if they're saying, well, I'm sorry, that's what's in the policy wording, when it comes to, say, unoccupied properties, it's just not relevant now. We've had some great responses from insurers where every commercial policy for a business who operates out of premises has an unoccupied property condition.
Right.
So if it's unoccupied for 21, 30, 45 consecutive days, then they exclude cover for loss of, you know, physical loss or damage. But a lot of insurers responded very positively and said, no, we're going to automatically extend that to 60 days. And then when lockdown continued after the 60 days, they said, we'll extend it to 90 days. So they were very responsive. An awful lot of them weren't. So it's been quite interesting to see how the industry responded.
Absolutely, and as customers and as brokers, I guess that will inform us where we go in the future in terms of how people have responded. But it's an interesting thing that you raise there, Simon, because of course a lot of us wouldn't even have thought about it. It never even dawned on me to check my business insurance policies about that. You know, I just sent everybody home. We haven't been in the office for months. Who knows? I mean, I don't even know if the office is still there.
I think the key to this, really, Paul, and it goes for anything really, not just this situation, is just communication.
Yeah.
If you've got a service provider, doesn't matter who's in insurance or printing or whatever, if you've got that open line of communication with them, saying, look, this is what I've done, are we still okay? Your professional advisor should be able to help you in that respect.
Yeah.
And if you're adventurous enough to not deal with an insurance broker and deal direct with an insurance company yourself, your business insurance, then you do need to have that level of communication with your insurer as well.
Yeah, I'm in danger of starting a rant now.
Oh, no. and we've got no biscuits.
No, it's one of my pet hates, but I want to come back and tie this into what Simon does, because it's really important what he just said. As we increase automation with customer service, it's actually getting worse and worse and worse. You know, you arrive at a call centre somewhere to an IVR box that asks you 5 questions, none of which are relevant to what you're ringing about. And then, you know, you get into all kinds of nonsense. I'm right in the middle of a similar problem right now with a credit card company. I won't bore you with the details, but communication just doesn't happen. Yeah. Because once it falls outside their automated processes, there is no way of handling it.
Yeah.
Bringing that right back, it's why increasingly I will use an insurance broker such as Simon rather than a comparison website. Because it's great going to a comparison website and getting a cheap quote for something.
Yeah.
But whenever you need something, you can't talk to anyone.
Yeah, exactly. That,
you know, whereas a broker, you can ring the broker, I can ring someone and go, listen.
Rant.
I can go, listen, mate, listen, you flogged me this insurance and I want you to do something about it.
It's the same with health insurance. I use a broker, and he's lovely.
But that's why we will use someone like Simon, and where his value is in that communication.
That you can pick up the phone. Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
It's important to note as well that people's default position is that if they go on Google, they'll get it cheaper.
Mm.
But that certainly used to be the case when buying insurance direct, but I would say there is little or no difference in pricing now.
Yeah.
And even if it's, say, 10 or 20 quid more, I mean, what price having someone represent you when there's a problem?
Yeah, absolutely. And just to re-emphasise that, in a completely different field, and I don't know if you've noticed, but again, because prices are readily available on the internet, therefore you don't see a lot of price difference. It's like cars. Once upon a time, you used to haggle over the price of buying a car or the price of selling a car.
Yes.
And now you don't haggle because there's a fixed price. Yeah. You know, if I want to sell my car, I look up on Glass's Guide the price, and I guarantee any dealer I ring and say, right, this is my car, they'll offer me that price.
Yeah.
There's no haggling because everybody knows the price. And I guess a lot of that has happened in the insurance business too, Simon, because now everybody knows what the baseline price is from the comparison websites. Most insurance companies are reasonably competitive.
Absolutely. I mean, we would never hold ourselves out to be the cheapest, but we're always there or thereabouts. And as I said, if it's a few quid more, you know, surely that's got to be worth paying to have someone fight your corner for you rather than you against them, and good luck with that.
Yeah, you're buying peace of mind, aren't you?
Exactly.
Yeah, and
you're buying insurance peace of mind.
Yeah. but you are, and increasingly people have to recognise that, because dealing with hidden organisations, and I call them, you know, it drives me nuts when they send you emails that you can't reply to, and I've had some hilarious things happen in the last few months. I bought some furniture from a very, very well-known company that have a lot of sales, I paid a deposit on the furniture, and the bulk of the money had to be paid the week before they delivered the furniture. And they sent me a text saying, we're going to deliver your furniture next week. Can you please pay the rest of your money by following this link? And the link in the text didn't work. It took you to a website that didn't exist. Mm. Now, I tried playing around with the link and thinking, you know, have they left out a letter or a number? And I couldn't make it work anywhere. I rang the company to try and tell them, and I wish I'd have recorded it, because I could have made two comedy shows out of it. It was hilarious. But, you know, so those kind of things happen. So, again, having someone that you can talk to, a human being, I think is worth its weight in gold these days. Mm.
And there must be so many people now that want to talk to Simon right now.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. So, Simon, as we gradually unlock from the lockdown, do you see any trends happening
in
the insurance industry? And the kind of things I'm thinking about is, are people trying to get pandemic cover insurance? Are people...
Yeah.
Are people looking at more at key worker insurance? You know, what are you seeing any trends emerge yet, or is it too early?
No, it's not too early at all. It's quite interesting at the moment with the cover for pandemics as such, in that there's been talk, and it is only talk at the moment, about setting up a central fund called Pandemic Re, whereas we have Flood Re, which is a pool that insurance companies pay into to cover properties in high flood risk areas where they can't get their insurance through the normal channels. And there is talk at the moment about maybe setting up Pandemic Re along the same line. So that'll be interesting to see how that pans out.
Mm.
I think also, again, it goes back to communication. What's important is that businesses keep their insurers, hopefully just their insurance brokers, informed of the changes in any changes in their activities, so mothballing parts of their premises, pivoting because they've got to carry out, basically they've got to change their business activities in order to survive. Mm. Having staff now working more from home, so from an employer's liability point of view, your insurers are aware that your staff aren't on the premises on normal working hours. So again, it just all goes back to communication. So, but I think for, in terms of insurance products, yes, pandemic re sounds a great idea. Let's see how it pans out. Mm. But then obviously you do need to look closely at ensuring that your employees are covered under employer's liability. So any injuries that befall them whilst they're working for you are covered. And also, as you said, key person insurance. You could look at relevant life. Business travel insurance as well to ensure if they suddenly get locked down, there's some form of cover there as well to cover their additional expenses. So again, it's just a matter of talking it through with your broker just to see what the options are, but also making sure that you tell the whole story.
Yeah, absolutely. I kind of want to ask you this as well. I've talked to a couple of people about this and got kind of different answers, so it'd be interesting to talk to you about it. It strikes me that we've had one of the biggest business experiments ever conducted over the last 4 months, where a huge number of people have worked from home.
Yes, definitely.
And one of the interesting things out of that is that a lot of people quite liked it, and a lot of businesses suddenly realised that their main objection wasn't much of an objection, i.e. they felt that productivity would fall, but in fact productivity went up for the most part.
Targets were met, people got healthier, they were having time to exercise, saved money.
Flexible working, all those kind of things. So a number of organisations have already indicated that they will continue to work from home no matter what. From an insurance point of view, Simon, do you have any thoughts about that? Are there things we have to think about if we are working more from home in terms of our home insurance?
Good question.
Not as such. If you're running your own business, then you do need to tell your insurers. But if you're an employee who is working from your own home, then you wouldn't normally have to notify your insurers. I mean, you know, you're working on the basis that you're going to be in the house, and if you're only carrying out clerical duties, then you know what damage can you actually cause? So that really doesn't cause so much of an issue.
If you're Joe Wicks and you're doing an aerobic workout at home,
or a bus driver, and you got your bus. No. We're getting silly now.
But the other side of the coin is if you're an employer and you've got employees working from home, then you still have the requirement to provide a safe place of work, and that includes, you know, the workstation that employee has at home.
We had a few weeks ago Tracy Miles, a physio, on the show with me and Paul, and she was saying that she was seeing a lot of neck injuries and upper back injuries because people were working on their beds. You know, they were sitting down more. You know, if they're a family, they've got, you know, perhaps a couple of kids working in different bedrooms. So I agree that work. I mean, my youngest has been sent. He works for Softcat, which is an IT company in London. He's in his flat in London, and he was supplied with second screens and sorts of things to raise his laptop so that he's protecting his back. I think that sort of thing is really important, don't you?
Very much, having the right chair, you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Well, I think there's going to be a whole new set of industries started around, or, you know, growing around remote working and ergonomic chairs. And funnily enough, I did a bit of research. Because what's called the SOHO business in America, small office, home office, is much more advanced than it is here. And I found a product which was an office in a chair.
Right.
So it was an ergonomic chair, but it had all these fold-out things so that basically when you sit in the chair, you fold it out, it's got a laptop stand and it's got a cup stand. And so basically if you don't have a lot of room in your house, you can have this chair which folds away, and then when you go to work, you unfold the chair and everything happens around the chair.
Brilliant.
But it's also an ergonomically designed chair.
Yeah.
So it supports your back and all the rest of it. Bargain at £1,200, but, you know, but you get the point of what it was doing. And I think, you know, like a lot of things, the price of those kind of things will come down as the demand goes up. But there will be a demand for them. So And just finishing off on where we are in the insurance business, Simon, so you've noticed some of those trends and some of the things that the industry itself is starting to contemplate. I guess, as you identified, you know, there's going to be fallout from this for quite a considerable time as people travel, you know, as businesses unlock again and people start travelling on business, they're going to go to parts of the world which are still in the grips of the pandemic, presumably.
I'm supposed to be in Singapore in October doing a conference, so still we're saying it's going ahead.
Yeah.
So a bit scary.
Well, what you have to be very careful with there is that you're under your travel insurance, you can be covered now, as you know from personal experience, Paul. You can be covered now, but if the advice by the FCO is not to travel to that location, then you won't be covered under your insurance. So you know, always follow the rules.
And exactly. The in fact, on the website that I was talking about, I bought my insurance. They had a big caveat that said if you bought insurance and you're now told you can't travel there, your insurance is invalid. And this particular company said, we've refunded the money, but the insurance is not valid because the FCO say you shouldn't go there. So you're absolutely right. So just finishing off, Simon, how do you feel about business going forward? Are you optimistic? Are you still a bit pessimistic? What's your overall view?
That's a really good question, actually. As I said, if we put the catastrophe to one side and the negative impact it's had on so many people's lives, effectively, more or less, we are in a recession, whether we like it or not. It might not be technically classified as a recession, but that is effectively what we're in.
Yeah.
And as per any previous recession, you always have winners and losers.
Yeah.
And it's the businesses that are agile and quick to respond and who are industrious that will survive and thrive.
Yeah.
The ones who sit back are the ones who are going to struggle. So if you've got an opportunity to do something differently, then just do it. From our point of view, we've lost a few clients who aren't trading. Some of them have already come back to us because they've started trading again. Some of them haven't. But equally, we've had some terrific wins where the quite substantial clients that we've won over the last few months, where they've been underserved.
Right.
One particular couldn't get through to his insurance broker, was on the hold for 2 hours, and eventually ended up talking to, there were only two members of the customer service team available, both working from home, with no access to the company system, no emails, taking handwritten notes and ringing one of the directors at the end of the day with the instructions.
Right.
This is a substantial insurance broking business, so it does provide opportunities as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I got a little bit of a funny story about that, not to do with insurance. I got an email from a very well-known telecoms company. I'll use an anagram of their name just so that I don't identify them. Yeah, TB.
I like what he did there.
they sent me an email saying, if you upgrade your broadband package now, you can get a discount. It wasn't due to run out for a couple of months, and I thought, well, I might as well. He said, click this link. So I clicked the link, and it said, you can't upgrade your package. You need to call us. So I called, and I spoke to a really nice young lady who started to talk me through what was going on, and she went, I'm really sorry, my computer's incredibly slow. So I said, is that because you're using BT broadband? And she went, no, she said, I'm working from home and I can't even get BT broadband.
No. TB though.
TB broadband, sorry. it just made me smile.
It's tough working from home. There've been some smashing webinars and Zooms where little children have come in and asked for biscuits halfway through.
Yeah, absolutely. But it is interesting how many call centres have managed to carry on business with people working their call centres from home.
Yeah.
You know, it's not the kind of thing that you thought of, but the technology exists to do it. It's worked. Mm-hmm. So, you know, again, the flexibility that you can introduce into the workforce by working like that is incredible.
I think there'll be a lot of garden offices going up this
exactly,
year.
Yeah. Simon, it's been a pleasure to talk to you as always. Thank you for your insights into what's been happening and what's likely to happen in the insurance business. We wish you and Morpheus Insurance a continued success. Thank you so much for joining us. We look forward to your next visit to the Business Bunker Show. In the meantime, stay safe and we'll see you again soon.
Thanks, Paul. It's been an absolute pleasure, and thank you for having me on the show.
It's always a pleasure. Oh, just before you go, give us a shout for your website so that people can come and check you out and talk to you.
That's very kind. www.morpheusinsurance.co.uk.
Fantastic. There's a link to that on the Business Bunker website, and that will remain on there too. Have a great afternoon, Simon, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Cheers, Paul. See you soon.
Yeah, cheers now. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
Very interesting, that. And, I mean, I'm going to phone him about my get some info. I couldn't talk to him about dogs on the, on the business.
I don't know.
Bunker.
If he does pet insurance, he might not do pet insurance.
But he'll know the practicalities of what my comeback is, you know, when you've forked out for 11 years.
I have to say, we've had exactly the same. Not with a completely different company. Mm. We've had exactly the same.
With dog or horse?
Dog. Yeah, dog.
Yeah,
dog.
Because the dog's elderly like mine.
The horse insurance and stuff like that tends to be a different order of things, because a lot more things go wrong with a horse that are accident, you know, like you get hit by a car, or you trip over a barbed wire fence, or you get kicked or whatever. Amanda has a particular horse that is injury prone. Every time you go to it, it's got a cut or a
might be putting it on though. Possibly.
I can't ride me today. I've got a limp.
Just needs a little biscuit or something.
That kind of veterinary insurance at that level, which is quite expensive, is also quite comprehensive. The problem with household domestic pet insurance is they just want to cover you for the snuffles, really, don't they? You know, if your dog needs some vitamin tablets, then fine. You know, and it'll cover you for the odd trip to the vet.
Yeah.
But, you know, like at the moment, our dog is going to have dental treatment at the vet, and it's blooming expensive. It's more expensive than my dental treatment.
Yeah, but at least it can get to the dentist. It's more than humans can.
Well, I asked for a complete set of false teeth, but they wouldn't do it.
For the dog?
Yeah, for the dog. Yeah. Much cheaper.
Implants.
Can't you take them all out and just give them false teeth?
Implants.
No, I wasn't going that far. Just false teeth. You should put them out at night, put them in a glass of water, and go to bed.
It's a really good idea. Suck a bone, couldn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I said to Gavin that my new husband, if you're listening, that we should have just put the money away. It's about 30-odd quid a month we're paying for the dog. Should just have put it away, because now, when she's 11 and a half, that's when we need it.
Yeah.
And, of course, the vet keeps saying she needs another blood test in four weeks, and I'm thinking, right, OK, and more money. Did you know that the Lower Thames Crossing, Paul Andrews, there's a consultation, it's opening, has opened, actually, on the 14th of July, and Highways England are proposing a number of changes to the design of the Lower Thames Crossing project, following feedback received from earlier consultations. You can go to Highways England to find out what's happened at that last consultation on the 14th of July by going to highwaysengland.co.uk /lower-thames-crossing-design. Do you know anything about that?
Well, you usually know
about most things.
What do you want to know about it, basically?
Well, what do you know what the outcome was of that 14th?
Oh, there isn't an outcome yet. They're still discussing it. They're still discussing ideas. They're even talking about where it's going to go.
Oh, over the Thames, presumably.
Yes, but from where to where? There was an idea about 18 months, 2 years ago, to move it right down near you.
Yeah.
And cross over to Southend.
That would be fabulous.
Yeah. So basically, move it down to near Whitstable. Not quite that far, I don't think. I can't remember exactly where it was. It was somewhere along that North Kent coast, but making landfall just outside of Southend and joining up with the A12 or whatever it is,
which bypasses the Dartford Tunnel.
Yeah.
Which they put their prices up.
The whole thing is to bypass the Dartford Tunnel. Yeah. And that's the whole point of the crossing.
But they put their prices up. We noticed. We flashed through yesterday, £2.50. Now.
Yeah, that will be the Dartford Tunnel that promised there wouldn't be any prices once they paid for it, which they paid for it 5 years ago.
It keeps going up.
Yeah.
But we were saying the technology for that is great, isn't it? You know, you do it all online, you just flash through. It's very clever. Yeah. I like that. It would be great. I think we should have a ferry, as I keep saying.
Mm.
Why don't we? Anyway,
the Lower Thames Crossing is another crossing that isn't the bridge or the Dartford Tunnel, at a slightly different location to ease the traffic load. That's supposed to be the idea. They've spent so long talking about it that by the time they do it,
we won't be here.
Sea levels would have risen and Kent won't be here anymore, apparently, or something.
Or would be part of Europe.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Well, whichever way it works, I don't know.
I find it exhausting. Whatever your business strengths, you need to shout out about them. And why not enter the Maidstone Awards 2020 and also the Ashford Awards 2020? The hashtag to use is MStone Awards 2020 or Ashford Awards 2020. Do it now. There's free entry. You can go to www.businessawardskent.co.uk.
Fantastic. Tracy Ann Barker's been on, said very interesting discussion with Simon from Morpheus Insurance about insurance. Complicated stuff. It is, and people don't realise how much effort you've got to put into making sure you've got the right cover.
Yeah.
Yeah. When people, I'm talking about business insurance.
Which is why
yeah?
you need a broker, because
exactly.
you're never going to read all that small print.
Exactly. It's one thing to go and buy, you know, your contents insurance for your house
yeah.
by just going, oh, you know, I've got three bracelets and a watch
yeah.
and a laptop, and can you cover me for 500 quid a year? But with business insurance of all kinds, you know, personal liability insurance, public liability insurance, employee insurance, all those mandatory things that you need, you need to understand that you have the right level of cover.
Yeah.
Because it's not just an insurance failure that you might experience, it's a legal operation failure, if you see what I mean.
If you don't declare something, you mean?
Yeah, no, but if you don't cover your staff properly, if somebody has an accident and you're not covered properly,
yeah.
you're in trouble.
Yeah.
And you're not just in trouble from an insurance point of view, you know, so you don't get paid out. You're in trouble from a personal point of view because somebody else is going to sue you or whatever.
Liable.
So always speak to a broker is my advice, because...
Well, you can say exactly what you need.
Yeah, and they
can...
And more than that, they can advise you on what is the right product for you.
Yeah.
Because there's so many products. It's like anything. Even if you go onto a comparison website
yeah.
and look at insurance, yeah, you'll get four quotes, all roughly the same. But if you look at what they cover,
yeah.
they're radically different things.
Yeah.
And if you know, when you get this, we'll match any insurance that you get.
Yeah.
You ring the company and you go, right, you've offered me insurance for 500 quid. I can get it for 300. They'll go, we'll see what we can do. What they actually do is they knock off things.
Yes.
Yeah. So they knock off cover.
Yeah.
So when they get it down to the same price, you're not getting the same product.
No.
Yeah. So it is complicated. You're absolutely right, Tracy Ann. And that's why we have insurance brokers. And why you need to talk to a good broker and have a good relationship with an insurance broker, because they will advise you the best products for you and your circumstances.
They'll tailor it.
Yeah, exactly.
The FSB, Thursday the 30th of July, which I believe is next Thursday, mm-hmm. isn't it? There's a webinar at 12:30, What Next for Tourism and Hospitality in Kent. It's an interactive virtual meeting hosted by YouImage Consult to hear about plans for the recovery of the region's tourism and hospitality industry. There is a hashtag for that, Kent Business Summit, and that will all be on FSB website, I would believe, under events.
Yeah. Right, I've got an offer here from the University of Kent.
Ooh. Is it cupcakes?
No, it's more than that, it's cash.
Ooh.
You can apply for an EIRA Innovation Vouchers supporting business-led projects of up to £7,500. Innovation Vouchers can provide a small or medium-sized business working with artificial intelligence, biotech, or in the digital or creative field with up to £6,000 to engage with academic expertise with the opportunity to foster a long-term partnership. Funds pay for our academic experts to provide a business with tailored expertise. We can help you with scoping or developing new products, solving problems, developing your employees, carrying out a feasibility study, scoping a new business idea, improving business efficiency, or exploring other ways to stimulate your company's growth. EIRA funds 80% of the total value of innovation vouchers, with companies funding the remaining 20% plus VAT on the full project. If you want to know more, there are four different people you can contact at Kent, depending on your business. So I will put up these links on the Business Bunker website later. They're all email addresses. If you're interested in artificial intelligence, then you need to email d.r.com. Shaw, spelled shaw-case@kent.ac.uk. If you're interested in biotech, s.j.birch, B-I-R-C-H, at kent.ac.uk. If it's digital creative, n.a.j.blackwood@kent.ac.uk. Or you can find more information about the whole thing by going to the website https://eira.ac.uk. That's eira.ac.uk to find out about that scheme. Sounds interesting. You can get academic expertise to help you develop and grow products and business in those fields.
Peter Searle, he is on the Twitter. You'll find him at Biz. Oh, this is, I need to read it properly. Biz, ADVS, R, Invicta. So Biz, ADVS, R, Invicta. And he says, hello, I'll be hosting the free FSB Southeast Networking with the Metro Bank on Wednesday the 29th of July with the guest speaker, Tracy Ann Barker. As mentioned on the Business Bunker today, and she's at Taba Official, so TABA_official. You can use the hashtag FSB Connect Online, and you can book in. You can you can find out details, I think, on their LinkedIn, Peter Searle, and also Tracy Ann Barker. She's the official guest speaker, and it's on Wednesday, the 29th of July, so next Wednesday, 4 p.m. to 5 p.m. And we'll also have details of that on Kent Business Radio website after the show. Also here for women, women in business, you can unleash your awesome, all those things you told yourself you could never do. It's not where you've been that matters, it's where you're going. And you can experience the magic of Taz Thornton, the most exciting speaker in the UK. This is in August on the 13th, it's a Thursday, 12 to 1:30, and you can go to kentwomeninbusiness.co.uk to book your free event with Taz Thornton.
I'm getting told off. I'm not sure what for.
Is it about cupcakes?
No, by Amanda, about one of my stories.
He hasn't eaten any, Amanda.
No, it's not cupcakes. It's about one of my stories about ringing someone.
All right.
No, apparently it wasn't me, it was her that rang.
Oh, well, you were listening.
Yeah, I was management.
I'm sure you chipped in.
No, I'm just management. I just tell them to do it.
Yeah, okay. So, but the Amanda, there are no biscuits in the studio and no nibbles at all. We're quite meagre at the moment, aren't we? Just a little cup of tea and that's it. Hot water. I've got a very, very long email. Do you want me to read it?
Well, I've got a couple to read before you do that.
Yeah.
Mine are medium length. This is an HMRC update. And it's key dates for the coronavirus job retention scheme and actions that you need to take. The key dates are to submit your CJRS, that's coronavirus job retention scheme, claim for periods ending on or before the 30th of June. They must be submitted by the 31st of July 2020. This is the last date you can make those claims. You need to have made a claim at any point on or before the 31st of July to be able to make a claim for future months. So if you're going to claim for future months, you must have made a claim by the 31st of July. Yeah.
Yeah.
From the 1st of August 2020, the scheme will no longer fund employers' national insurance and pension contributions for furloughed employees. You will have to make these payments from your own resources. So from the 1st of August, even if you've got furloughed staff, you've now still got to pay employers' national insurance and workplace pension contributions. Then from the 1st of September 2020, you will have to start contributing to the wages of your furloughed employees. Grants will be for 70% of the usual wages in September and 60% in October. But furloughed employees will continue to be entitled to receive at least 80% of their usual wages. You will have to make up the difference from your own resources. So let me tell you that again, because that's a little bit complicated.
Yeah.
As of the 1st of September, you will have to start contributing to the wages of furloughed employees. Grants will be for 70% of the wages in September and 60% in October, but furloughed employees will continue to be entitled to receive at least 80%. So if you have a furloughed employee in September, you have to provide 10% of their wages plus the employer's national insurance plus workplace pension. If they're still furloughed in October, you have to provide 20% of their wages plus employer's national insurance plus workplace pension. And then after October, you get nothing. You're back to funding everything yourself.
Which is where we may see a huge crash.
Unfortunately, yes.
Yeah, it's really sad. I actually went to support a local business that we, Gav and I, my new husband and I, regularly walk round and have a breakfast midweek, usually, sort of about 10:30 when we're working. And she said she was open, didn't have to book, she said, by text. And I went round. I normally have a little egg and bacon and some avocado or some smoked salmon and a coffee. And we have an hour's chat about the business and then we toddle off and back home to the office. And I went there at 10:30 and was peering through the window and it was closed. And she was busy in the kitchen on her own, cleaning. This is the owner, no other staff. It's normally open. People are sitting and having breakfast. And I tapped through and I said, you know, are you doing breakfast as arranged? And she said, yeah, I can do a sandwich. And I, you know, I'm gluten free. So I said, well, normally I have egg and bacon and got no eggs, got no avocado. This is a lady who said I could go for breakfast by text. And she said, we're not open till 11. This is breakfast. And she was on her own cleaning. So I don't know how that business is going to survive. And Gav said to me, well, just go home and get an avocado and ask her to chop it up. And it's not that I can't do it at home, but it was the whole thing of trying to support a small business. So we toddled home and did our own breakfast.
Mm.
But is this because she's got her staff are all on furlough? That must be it.
Yeah.
So she's in there cleaning the kitchen, can't open up on her own.
Yep.
Bad.
It's so difficult, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, people are trying to stay out. You've got to be careful as well. If you're furloughed, you can't go to work. You know, but I'm furloughed, but I keep getting stuff. HMRC send me stuff. What am I supposed to do? Ignore it?
Yeah.
You know, my landlord sent me a threatening letter that I haven't paid the rent. What am I supposed to do? Go. I tried emailing him and go, I'm furloughed. And he goes, I don't care.
Mm.
You know, so it's really difficult in these circumstances, knowing what to do for the best. So many organisations were desperate to open, but it's almost impossible. I was talking to Amanda this morning. Mm. They're starting to produce the guidelines for events.
Yeah.
Yeah. But they're horrendous.
If you have to do 1.5 metres away, how can you sit and have a coffee with someone? It's very difficult.
You can't even have speakers at the event in case they talk too loud.
Well, you can't sing in church.
Yeah, yeah.
It says it all, doesn't
you know,
it?
So the fact is, about the only thing, but think about it, Amanda made a good point about this as well. The only thing that's really going to happen at the end of this year is going to be Christmas parties, right? She knows someone that's already been given a gig to arrange a Christmas party for 300 employees.
Right.
Well, you need a space that can cope with 1,000 people for that.
Exactly.
Because of the distancing.
Yeah.
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 So it's going to be horrendously expensive.
And it's also about the venues. You know, if they've only got a small kitchen, they can't have all the porters and the kitchen porters and all the choppers and the chefs and the waiters all going in and out that kitchen. That's the trouble.
Yeah.
So it's
incredibly difficult for anyone to open effectively or to do an effective job still until we completely unwind.
Mm. Well, I did hear some news last night that Oxford professors think that they're on to a vaccination.
Mm-hmm.
So let's keep our fingers crossed.
Yeah,
it's amazing that China haven't come up with one yet. I mean, they had it first.
Yeah.
You know, they've had a few more months than us.
I think based on what's been happening with China, even if they did, I don't think a lot of people would have it, you know.
No.
I think there'd be, a lot of...
an uproar.
Well, I just think there'd be a lot of reticence because they don't, you know, you wouldn't know what you're getting.
No.
A lot of people are already saying that they're not taking the vaccine anyway because, you know, it's going to inject them in 5G or something. I don't know.
where do we go from there?
Yeah. I'll tell you what interests me more is the overlap between this and flu.
Mm.
And what bothers me is the flu season normally starts at the end of September, beginning of October. If we suddenly start reporting flu again, is everybody going to panic
and think it's
COVID?
Yeah.
Because, you know, how are you going to, you know, the overlap of that is going to be quite high.
But this is the thing with employers and employees. You know, all an employee has got to do is say, I'm not feeling very well. And what have they got to say? They've got to say, don't come in.
Yeah.
Immediately.
Yeah.
Or my wife, husband has got, you know, severe diabetes or, you know, high risk. This is the trouble. Or my grandmother's got diabetes. I don't know. It's very, very tough for employers.
We're not. I don't think we've even touched on what the problems are going to be here. You know, at the moment, we're still in the embers
of the
pandemic and what it did, and the people that sadly caught it and died. But I don't think we fully understood the ramifications of where we go from here. Because one of the interesting things is, and this is very morbid and sounds horrible, but it's just the fact, people panicked when they saw the death numbers every day.
Yeah.
But they had no idea how many people die on an average day in the UK, because we never publish them.
Exactly, and care homes and...
1,400 people on average die every day in the UK.
Yeah.
And always have done.
Well, actually, they're down this year, deaths, I heard, this week.
The XF death toll during the last quarter was 60,000. It was much higher. But the death toll before that was much lower. Mm. So over 12 months, it's about the same. Mm. And that's about average of what you get. The problem is that when people start dying of flu, which they do every year, 2015 was the worst. 80,000 people died of flu in 2015.
Yeah, huge. But we didn't hear about that.
But nobody reported that, so nobody did anything about it. This year, people will report that, and we're going to panic again, and we're going to start locking down again. And that's what bothers me, is how do we get out of this?
But also
panic?
The track and trace. We're not using an app, are we?
No.
Like some countries. So, you know, I have started going out now, having been in for 14 weeks with my mask on and all my stuff. But if I got ill and somebody asked me where I've been, I've got no way of remembering where I've been for the whole week. You know, I might have talked to my postman, socially distancing. I've been to the post office, socially distancing. But I can't possibly remember everything I've done in a week. You know, I've been sitting in a studio with you, huffing and puffing over you.
I'm ignoring the obvious of why you can't remember what you were doing yesterday.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Very catty, thank you.
Yeah, that's all right.
I was thinking about Henry's cupcakes, because, you know, when you've been sitting on a beach drinking and you have a little bit of a hangover, you do fancy a cupcake, don't you?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Right. We're almost at the end of the show. There's only a couple of minutes left. I need to tell you about this. A book now for the Marsh Network online. Wednesday the 22nd of July, that's manana, tomorrow. Another good turnout for Marsh Network Online last Wednesday, with 25 people booked and 22 in the Zoom room. We heard about what businesses offer and the support that they were looking for, and had a good discussion about what business is beginning to look like as we come out of lockdown. Book now to join our next meeting, 10:30 a.m. Wednesday the 22nd of July in the Zoom room. Give and receive support, grow your contacts, network and your business. Booking is essential. Book now to reserve your place. You can book by going to eventbrite.co.uk/Marsh Network Online. You can book a free ticket, or you can make a small charity donation ticket, and we will send you a link to join nearer the time. That's from the lovely Terry Botfield. You can follow Terry on the Twitter. TD Botty is his Twitter handle.
He's got the best Twitter handle.
Yeah. Or you can go and book your either free space or your charity space on eventbrite.co.uk/Marsh Network. Do check that out.
There's Jennifer Nash, who was on last week.
Yep.
And she says, such a joy to be doing what I love. Spotlight Zine, that's her magazine, isn't it?
Yep.
So it's at Spotlight Zine, Z-I-N-E. Here is another treat for you, Jules Serkin. No mention of you, sorry. Another wired woman telling her authentic story. So check that out, Spotlight Zine. It's a good one. And the wired woman is a lady called Nikki Regazzoni.
Cool.
Which makes me want to go and have pasta, frankly.
It does, yeah. I've signed up for regular copies of Spotlight Zine.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you have to pay for it?
Or? No. It's a newsletter.
I will also sign up then.
Yeah.
Good.
That's good.
Yeah, because I'm on a budget. I was thinking about the furlough as well. Don't forget, a lot in hospitality are down on their tips, so they might be getting 80%, but they're not getting 300 quid or whatever of tips, which they would often make. Same with hairdressers and, you know, the tipping and hospitality industry.
Yep, for sure. Have you got anything else?
Mine are too long, I'm afraid.
I beg your pardon?
My emails are too long to fit into the time we have. I'm not going to gabble them, in other words.
Okay, well, we're kind of almost at the end of the show now. So, everybody's saying I burped on air. I didn't do anything of the kind.
Is Amanda listening?
No, that was Paul Manville saying you burped on air. I did not burp on air.
It was quite spectacular, but it was quite a quiet, discreet one. It's fine.
Didn't burp. Where did I burp?
Wait till you listen back.
Oh, if I did, I'll take it out anyway.
It probably wasn't really a burp. It's just a little bit of wind, wasn't it? I'm trying to think of the worst things we've ever done on air. I think we haven't really done. We've been quite good, really, in all these years, haven't we?
On the whole.
Yeah, on the whole. Going back to Spotlight magazine, Jennifer's Twitter handle is I am Jen Nash. It's only because I need a coffee now and a cupcake. So, and Ark and Brooke, have you heard of them?
Yes. Ark and Brooke is the lady you were just talking about, Jennifer Nash. That's her company.
Oh, her other one. Okay. So, yeah. Authentic, independent, locally expert, globally connected, impartial thought leadership. That's an impressive bio there. Mm. Membership body and publisher. So, it's Spotlight Zine and Ignite Awards. And you can find Jennifer on arkandbrooke.com.
Fantastic. That brings us to the end of another show. We'll be back next week. Bye for now.
Bye-bye.